Hello and welcome to Comment with me, Roshan Mohammed Salih, standing in for George Galloway this week. On today's show, we'll be asking a simple question. How can ISIL be defeated? Many of you will have seen the horrific video during which members of the Takfiri group burned alive a Jordanian pilot who was targeting ISIL-held territory in Syria. The video has enraged the whole world with its sheer barbarity, and there's speculation that it'll lead to a strengthening of the somewhat half-hearted anti-ISIL coalition. On today's show, I'll be arguing that ISIL's actions, and in fact the group itself, is a perversion of Islam and needs to be destroyed, but not destroyed by the West, but by the people of the region itself. I'll also be arguing that the West are ultimately the creators of ISIL because they've created the conditions for them to thrive by destabilizing the Middle East. And while I sympathize with the family of the pilot and the Jordanian people, we must also recognize that many Arab states have been complicit in the West's crimes, including the King of Jordan, who's a close Western and Israeli ally. You can call me on +44 208 601 4555 to share your views. You can also SMS me on +44 78 00 00 80 66, and you can email me on comment@presstv.co.uk, and you can also tweet us at @comment_presstv. And I promise you, we'll prioritize your views or calls if you actually disagree with what I'm saying. Okay, before I take your calls, I just want to say a few words about ISIL. I had the displeasure of viewing the entire 20-minute video yesterday, and as a journalist, I have to say that what I found was very fishy indeed. Leaving aside the sheer barbarity of burning someone alive and then boasting about it, I'm really beginning to believe these videos could be the work of a security service or an agency which wants greater intervention and more war in that part of the world. Firstly, how did ISIL get hold of all that archive footage, some of which professional TV researchers couldn't manage to get hold of with years of trying? Secondly, how come the graphics, camera work, and editing are so advanced? Thirdly, how come the editorial coherence of the 20-minute piece is better than any documentary on any Arab satellite channel I've ever seen? And fourthly, how did ISIL get hold of all those Jordanian pilot details that they showed at the end of the video? I don't have all the answers, but to say the whole thing is fishy is an understatement. Personally, I blame the West, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey for the rise of ISIL. The West created the conditions for terrorist groups to thrive by invading and destabilizing Iraq in 2003. Saudi and Qatar have been financing and supporting terrorist groups in Iraq for years, and more recently, they've done the same in Syria. And everyone knows that Turkey has let thousands of terrorists cross its border unhindered into Syria in an attempt to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad. I also find the Western media outrage over the burning of the pilot extremely hypocritical. It was their prisons in occupied Iraq which served as an incubator for ISIL. They indirectly route arms and funds to ISIL and directly support other Takfiri groups. So they're morally outraged by an execution by fire when they're responsible for setting the entire region alight. Wrapping up now, many of you will have seen the images of King Abdullah of Jordan posing in military fatigues, pledging revenge on ISIL, Clint Eastwood style. All I can say is that we should be very cautious. The King of Jordan is very popular in Tel Aviv and Washington and has consistently implemented their agendas in the Middle East. It's true that the King probably feels threatened by the Takfiris within his midst, but to expect him to solve the ISIL problem is far-fetched, to say the least. Finally, I'd like to address those Muslims who may be naive and misguided enough to actually want to join or support ISIL. All major Islamic scholars have condemned ISIL's recent and not so recent actions. And that includes scholars who don't work for any government or have any agenda but to further the cause of Islam. Burning alive a captive of war is haram. The ruling on this is very clear indeed. Summarily executing prisoners is haram. Killing civilians is haram. ISIL is haram. Okay, I'm going to stop talking for the time being, and without further ado, I hope to take some of your calls. I hope we have somebody online. I'm hearing that we have Shaz, who is in the UK. Shaz, what would you like to talk about tonight?
Hello, assalamu alaikum, Roshan. How are you?
Alaikum salam. I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, I think just listening to your analysis, I think you basically said the right things about Qatar and Saudi Arabia financing it, and the West have laid out the conditions for them. How we can tackle, the best way to tackle is perhaps the Muslim scholars themselves. They need to come out unilaterally, unconditionally, condemn anything that ISIS and such groups are doing, anything like that, because simply it's un-Islamic. And anybody doing it in their name should be unconditionally condemned. And I feel Muslim scholars, not unilaterally, are not coming out to condemning it enough.
Really?
Scholars, nobody in their right mind would actually support it anyway.
But Shaz, if I can stop you there for a minute and just ask you, I think it's a little bit unfair to say that not enough scholars have condemned. I think across the different Islamic sects and across the different Muslim countries, even Muslims in the West, there has been widespread condemnation of ISIL.
I think, yes, you may be, yes, there has been, but I think from the sort of feeling I get from within the Muslim scholars is it's divided into groups. And, ISIL represents a Sunni group, largely represents, it's a totally Sunni, a certain part of a Sunni group. And unfortunately, I believe, you wouldn't, for example, you would not find a Shia group doing something like that, because simply they probably have a leadership to follow. Whereas within Sunnis, any group, anybody operates in their own ways, and therefore they do not have any leader to follow.
It's an interesting
to look up to.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make. I'm a Sunni Muslim myself, this might be controversial what I'm about to say, but I have noticed within Shia Islam, it's important that we don't generalize too much, so I don't want people to take what I say as a crass generalization. But I think within Shia Islam, there are leaders, major leaders, who the followers of that religion, by and large, obey. So there's a certain hierarchy and there's a certain discipline. Whereas in Sunni Islam, we don't have that so much. And perhaps that means that deviant groups can infiltrate Sunni Islam more than Shia Islam. But that's my own opinion. That's something that people will perhaps disagree with me on. Thank you very much, Shaz, for your call tonight. We're going to go on to our second caller of the day, Tahir, who's also here in the UK where I am. The question tonight is, how can ISIL be defeated? Tahir, please go ahead. You have the air.
Assalamualaikum, Roshan.
Welcome, salam.
I think it's evident that bombing ISIL is definitely not going to be successful. It never was going to be, and I think the current bombing campaigns by the Western coalition obviously haven't worked and aren't working. It was always going to be a case of supporting the Syrian government and the Syrian troops, and supporting the Iraqi government and the Iraqi troops. I think that has always been the way to go forward, and I think it is the way to go forward. And particularly now, with a lot of the neighbouring Sunni countries to both Iraq and Syria, where the situation is now becoming closer to home, whereas previously, I think, it was a case of look on and watch from the sidelines. I think now that the situation is becoming a little bit more closer to home, I think they really need to do whatever they can to support both Iraq and Syria in terms of the government.
I mean,
they've tried supporting the opposition groups in Syria.
Yeah.
Maybe now they should really try supporting
the government. Yeah. Well, I remember William Hague and Foreign Secretary here and many other dignitaries, as well as Americans, saying Assad is doomed. They kept on saying that. They don't say that anymore, do they? This Western coalition against ISIL, I think it's half-hearted at best. You know, they perhaps don't want ISIL to attack their allies, Iraqi Kurdistan, for example. But they're okay with ISIL slaughtering Shias in Baghdad, aren't they? I've never really bought into this anti-ISIL coalition. I think it's more to delineate borders in which ISIL can operate rather than a sincere attempt to destroy the group. I think that ultimately it's the regional countries that are going to destroy ISIL if they choose to do so. I personally don't think that the West has a role to play. I don't think it's any of the West's business. Some people in the West might say, oh yeah, but you know, ISIL terrorists are going to come back here and threaten us. But ultimately, I think that Western intervention in that region, we have the history, we've seen what happens. It always ends in disaster. So I'd prefer the West not to be involved at all. But again, that's just my opinion. Thank you, Tahir, for your call. We're going to move on now to Alexander. Lots of calls from the UK today. Alexander, our question tonight is, how can ISIL be defeated? What would you like to say, Alexander?
Hi, David. The only way that ISIL can be defeated is basically, the West have to stop supporting them. And the other thing as well, is like the Arab puppets, they have to stop, sending money to them. And the other way we can stop them is basically, I think, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, they should all come in and try to basically go in there and keep on bombing them. And I don't know why United Arab Emirates stopped, bombing them. They should continue doing that. Or the other way is to basically the West, because they started this, they nourished them. I think it's the superpowers, UK, America, France, to all come together and deal with it, because this is the mess that they created.
You think, Alexander? You think that the West is directly supporting ISIL then?
I think so. Yeah. Well, because McCain went all the way to Syria, the back door of Syria. Someone who's in the Senate, United States Senate, going like the back door through Syria. So obviously, yeah. They're supporting them. In one side, they're saying, oh, they are barbaric and all that, and then on the other hand, they wanted it to go into Syria and mess up that country.
Well, you know, I think ultimately a lot of cloak and dagger stuff is going on at the moment. Syria is a really badly reported country, just because journalists can't really make it there and can't really report as freely as they would like to be able to report. So we really, in a way, we don't know what's happening. And I think in the years to come, we might be quite shocked over who supported who, et cetera, et cetera. But I thank you, Alexander, for your call tonight. We're going to move on again. We have our fourth call in a row from the UK, Shabir. Shabir, again, just reminding all our viewers, our question tonight is, can ISIL be defeated? Shabir, go ahead and make your point, please.
Just wanted to point out that actually defeating ISIS is really not that difficult when you think about it. Because ISIS is a manufactured phenomenon. It requires, I suppose you could say, an oxygen. And you just need to cut that oxygen off. It will shrivel up into a little wreck and fall apart at the seams. Much like its partner in crime, which is the Zionist entity, you cut the oxygen, they'll suffocate. There'll be nothing left.
What is that oxygen?
The oxygen is funding. It's the veto power in the UN that America uses habitually and almost pathologically to ensure that no criticism of Israel ever happens.
Mm.
If we look at the convenience factor, if there's people who are skeptical about the Israeli connection to Daesh, I don't like using the term ISIL or ISIS because they're not. They're Daesh. They're a group of criminal mercenaries, nothing more, nothing less. Israel has Jabhat al-Nusra, which is a part of Al-Qaeda, which is a part of this thing, Daesh.
Yeah.
It's all the same gibberish. It's all the same rubbish. Different mercenaries, different branding. The West is very good at branding, likes branding the same thing in different, many different ways. So you have Daesh sitting on the border in Jolan with occupied Palestine, and the Israelis are not even interested in them. They're not threatened by them. Instead, they go into Syrian Golan and bomb civilian camps.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I remember a big criticism of Assad from those who oppose him has always been you never attack Israel. But Jabhat al-Nusra is on Israel's border now, and there is nothing stopping them from actually attacking Israel, is there?
Absolutely nothing. But at the end of the day, there is one thing stopping them. If they attack Israel, that would mean they're attacking themselves, and it's not very often you see someone smashing their head open.
Mm.
I mean, okay, pun intended, yes, there are some people who do that, but let's, you know, any sane person doesn't do that.
Shabir, before you go, can I ask you one direct question? Because I must pose this question to you. Is there any direct proof that the West is supporting ISIL? Because, you know, people will say it's all conspiracy theory, it's all rumour. What's the proof?
I think it's more a case of Occam's razor. And a case of if it swims like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. As for direct proof, yes. If you look at Hillary Clinton's memoirs, she openly said that they helped the creation of Al-Qaeda back in the day when they were trying to make their little adventure in Afghanistan and, you know, do what they did. They created Taliban. If you look at the ideology of all of these, it's the same ideology. It's got nothing to do with Islam. It usurps Islam. We have François Didier, the journalist, who openly said in an interview on CNN, very clearly said, they didn't even have Quran and they weren't interested in Quran.
Yeah.
Now, what Muslim, quote, extremist is not going to be interested in Islam, given that Quran allegedly is giving him all of the impetus to do what he did?
Thanks a lot, Shabir. Yeah, very important point you ended on there. I mean, I think it is really important to de-Islamize this group. You know, they have no Islamic legitimacy at all. If you listen to the scholars from different sects all over the world, you know, they all reject them. Even the kind of extremists, you know, the people on the radical end of the Islamic spectrum, Al-Qaeda even, you know, rejects ISIL as being too extreme. So the lunatics of Al-Qaeda, you know, have abandoned the lunatics of ISIL. Mason is also in the UK. Mason, we're talking tonight about ISIL, which is pretty obvious by now. I think everyone can figure that one out. Mason, what would you like to say?
Assalamu alaikum, Roshan.
Alaikum salam.
I want to quote something that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said. A Muslim is the brother of a Muslim. He neither oppresses him, nor does he fail him. He neither lies to him, nor does he hold him in contempt. The whole of a Muslim for another Muslim is inviolable, his blood, his property, his honor. And that is the message I want to give to these phony Muslims who have usurped my Sunni sect and claim to be speaking for the Sunnis in our Arab world. I want to say one thing to you. IS, ISIL, whatever you want to call it, equals Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, IS, Israeli State. That's who is behind all this. I might be controversial, etc., but Israel is behind this. They, along with their servile servants in the United States, the UK, and France, have been training and arming these paid mercenaries, and the funding has been done by the Saudis, the Qataris, and the UAE.
Okay, Maysoon. Thank you very much for your call and making those points. I mean, I'd just like to agree with partially with what you were saying, certainly about how these guys are hijacking Islam. And I'm very offended by it. As a Sunni Muslim myself, you know, I really feel as though they've hijacked my sect, and they've, you know, they're giving everyone a amazingly bad impression of what a Muslim should be. And I find that extremely offensive. And they've done it with petrodollars. They haven't done it by the force of their argument. They haven't done it by coming up with a better theological argument than anyone else. They've done it by spreading their propaganda all over the world. We have Mohammed in Saudi Arabia. And I think Mohammed is our first foreign call tonight. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Yeah, good evening. How are you? Hello?
Hello, Mohammed. Please go ahead and make your point.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Mohammed. Go ahead and make your point, please.
Yes. I think those who created ISIS in the first place were also fighting. Yeah, because as of now, we can't see all the pretense they are doing. All what they are doing is just pretense. They are not fighting ISIS. Because if they are fighting ISIS, how are they getting the weapons? When ISIS started killing people in the in Iraq and Syria, they didn't do anything until an American was killed. That is why when they involve their puppets in the Middle East to start bombing innocent civilians. When the Sinjar Mountain was besieged by ISIS, tactically they were dropping weapons for ISIS.
Mm.
So I cannot see the sincerity in the fighting ISIL, because actually
you don't think it's a sincere attempt to fight ISIL, then it's a half-hearted. Mohammed?
Naam, again?
Yeah, you don't think it's a sincere attempt to fight ISIL. It's very half-hearted.
No, they are not fighting ISIL, because this is you see, whenever this kind of crisis is happening in a country, you have to involve the neighboring country. And the neighboring country that we know that can fight ISIL is Iraq.
Yeah.
They are not involving Iraq. So, which means there is no sincerity.
Okay. Thanks, Mohammed, for your call from Saudi Arabia, our first foreign call of the night. And it's good to receive a call from outside of the UK. What I would say is that ISIL threatens Saudi Arabia. It also threatens Qatar and all the other Persian Gulf countries. If they don't get around to fighting them, ISIL is going to swallow them up at some point. We have another call from abroad, Le Monde in Libya. Le Monde, tonight we're asking how ISIL can be defeated. What's your view?
Le Monde in Libya.
Yes.
Le Monde, tonight we're asking how ISIL can be defeated.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, Le Monde.
Hello. My dear, the way that ISIL can be defeated, except the America change the policy against Syria. If that America change the policy against Syria, so the ISIL can always continue. Mm. And firstly, who created ISIL? America created ISIL to destroy the Syria so that they can use the opportunity to use the military action against the Syria government. And thank God, the king turned back and backfire to them. And 2012, the France government, he said that ISIL are doing the right thing, which they are calling their jihad. But now they are turned back to them, they are now shouting. Why are they shouting? Look at Jordan. The Jordan gave the American opportunity to train the military militant in his own country.
Yes.
To attack his own labor country. And now the thing turned back to them. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a really important point, that Jordan, you know, ultimately Jordan has... Sorry, we're getting some feedback here. Le Monde, I just want to make a quick point. Jordan helped to train a Syrian rebel army on its own territory. And that army has been allowed to cross the border into Syria, no hindrance whatsoever. So in a way, these attacks on Jordan are blowback to a certain extent. Le Monde, I'll just allow you to come back in briefly before we go to the break. Le Monde, I think you have to turn off your TV because we're getting feedback here. So
I'm hearing you.
All right.
Now that if America can take the policy against the Syria, it would be good. If you look at what is happening in Ukraine now, it's because of the case of the Syria that America has no half chance to use the military intervention against the Syria government. That's why they have destroyed the backyard of Russia.
Yeah.
So that if I create problem on your backyard, so you don't have chance to support your fellow colleague. So, but now,
okay.
Now if you look at the case of ISIL, just to give you an example, look at Nigeria.
Okay, Le Monde, I'm going to have to cut you off now because we're going to a break very shortly. But yeah, just summarizing, they need to change their Syria policy for this to be sorted out. We're going into short news bulletin now, but before we do that, just a reminder that on today's show, we'll be asking a simple question. How can ISIL be defeated? ISIL fights in the name of Islam, but does it have any Islamic legitimacy? Are the West to blame for ISIL's rise? And will King Abdullah of Jordan, a close Western and Israeli ally, be able to wage an effective war on the Takfiri group? You can call me on +44 208 601 455 type to share your views. Don't go away. I'll see you again in a few minutes. Welcome back to Comments. We're taking your calls today on ISIL. How can ISIL be defeated? Do they have any Islamic legitimacy? Are the West to blame for ISIL's rise? And will King Abdullah of Jordan be able to wage an effective war on the Takfiri group? Those are our questions tonight. I haven't got all the answers, so I really do need your calls. Please get on the phone and call in. Our telephone number is +44 208 601 4555. SMS +44 7800 008066. And you can email me comment@presstv.co.uk. The Twitter account is comment_PressTV. My novel idea about defeating ISIS, I certainly have not got all the answers, as I said before, but I think ultimately a regional alliance is the only thing that's really going to defeat ISIL. I think Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Turkey are obviously behind this group to one extent or another. If Turkey closes that border between itself and Syria and stops letting the terrorists cross the border, then ISIL really will have one oxygen supply cut off. If Saudi and Qatar, I know they deny it, but nobody believes them. If they cut off the funding, whether it's direct or indirect, official or unofficial, then again, another oxygen supply is denied to ISIL, and they will soon cease to function. At the moment, we have Iran fighting ISIL. We have Iraq fighting ISIL. We have Hezbollah fighting ISIL. But we don't really have, the West claims to be fighting ISIL, and certain Arab states claim to be fighting it, but it seems a very, very half-hearted attempt in my point of view. I think we have to beware of Western intervention, because ultimately Western intervention really has led to disaster in the Middle East. We have the example of Iraq in 2003. I was no fan of Saddam Hussein, but ultimately there were no Takfiris in Iraq while he was around. There was no civil war in Iraq while he was around. Things have got immeasurably worse since 2003. We have the example of Libya. Again, no fan of Gaddafi, but ultimately he held the country together. What have we got now after NATO bombing, 6 months of NATO bombing, France, the UK and America? We have a country which is, again, in civil war. We have two governments. We have Takfiris running riot. We have the Libyan branch of ISIL and Al-Qaeda causing mayhem in that country. The lesson is obviously that if you destabilize a country, you unleash forces that cannot be controlled, forces that ultimately will one day come back to bite you. I think that, you know, the people in the region really have to beware of Western intervention. Ultimately, the Syria imbroglio needs to be sorted out. If that isn't sorted out, then we will never sort the rest of the region out. That war has killed over 200,000 people. That war has destroyed a country. That war has pitted Muslim against Muslim. And as long as it continues, as long as no political solution is found, then the fires in the region will get worse and not better. And therefore, I think anybody who calls for all-out war in Syria and doesn't support a political solution, ultimately is part of the problem and not part of the solution. Interestingly, in the first half, we had callers that supported the Syrian government and said that ultimately the West has to change policy and not support the Syrian rebels anymore, but support the Syrian government. I think that's a long shot, to be honest. I think that's not going to happen. But I think they have realized that their regime change objectives are pie in the sky and are not going to take place. When it comes to Jordan, we've seen in the last few days that the King of Jordan has donned military fatigues and Clint Eastwood style threatened ISIL. I think it's blessed myself. I think that Jordan ultimately is a buffer state to protect Israel. Its military is almost completely financed by the US. So it's really difficult to see Jordan being able to do much when it comes to ISIL. I think that it's almost laughable to expect them to take on ISIL, and they have a huge problem of Takfiri groups within their midst as well that would love to overthrow the Jordanian regime. I think we have some Twitter messages. We have two tweets which hopefully will appear on the comment wall any moment now. We have Baliag Ross. Now, I'm probably pronouncing that name incorrectly, but I'll go ahead. Baliag Ross says, how about implementing a punishment for anyone in ISIL similar to the punishment for shirk? So I think Baliag there is basically recommending that we excommunicate those who fight for ISIL and support ISIL. It's an interesting thought. I think a lot of Islamic scholars have said that they will do that, and they've already gone as far as to say they're not Muslims. So don't say they might claim to fight or do what they do in the name of Islam, but ultimately they're not Muslims. But I think we also have a minority of Muslims who make excuses for ISIL. I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say, you know, they're not ISIL, they don't have the same mindset as ISIL, but they will kind of blame anybody else apart from ISIL. And I think ultimately the House of Islam does have a lot of problems within its own midst. The House of Islam needs to sort out their own mess, and ISIL is a mess. We have one more comment on the Twitter wall that I'd like to read out before we hopefully go to some more calls. Jakes, I pronounced it correctly this time. Jakes says, comment at Press TV, this blame game will not help. When a mosquito bits you, kill it and don't, and not blame somebody. Don't blame somebody. How many West is doing the killings? I'm not sure exactly what Jakes means, to be honest, but reading between the lines, I think, you know, if you're saying don't blame the West, then ultimately, you know, they have caused a lot of problems in that region. They have lit many fires. So if we can't blame the West, then we're not really giving you the full picture. But I agree that the regional countries have to look in the mirror as well, and Muslims have to look in the mirror as well, because ultimately, if we just blame the West, then we're diverting attention from our own issues. We have a call on the line. Mohammed is in Somalia. Mohammed, if you've got your television on, because I'm getting a bit of feedback in my ear, if you've got your television on, please turn it down. I've talked enough, so I'll pass the airtime over to you, Mohammed. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Mohammed.
Okay, yeah, I would like to make some comments. You know, because the question is, how can ISIS be defeated? To me, you know, as long as the Muslims are divided, right? You know, for example, good example, like look at Jordan right now. They were training in ISIL or whatever, those Syrian rebellions in their own territory. And now when they kill their pilot, all of a sudden, you know, ISIL looks bad. You were also mentioning that, you know, Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, Turkey, they're all Muslims, right? So so it should start with the Muslims first. They should stop, you know, supporting those killers. To me, I know, we all know they're not representing any Islam. They are thugs. Because there's no way, it doesn't matter whether you're Muslim or Christian, you can burn someone alive, period. You cannot cut someone on their throat. So basically my opinion is, it's about time the Muslims to wake up and to say, you know what, the problem is us. So we have to, I mean, what is the solution? For example, the other thing, in Europe, you know, like you live in Europe, right? Every time, you know, they killed someone, let's say last time in Paris, or last time one in Germany, like a lot of, you know, in races they came out and they were against Islam, right? Guess what? Next day there were Germans who came out in a mass. And, you know, they were like, these people, yeah, they don't represent us. So why not ask the Muslims when we, you know, instead of saying, okay, we know that we're the majority, 99.99, we are good people, right? So why don't we just, you know, use the media, especially, you know, Muslims who live in the Western. It's about time. You know, the media is very powerful.
Yeah.
So come out mass. If people that come out mass in London, France, and say, you know what, these people, they don't represent us. Trust me.
I think Mohammed, to be fair, Muslims living in the West, in places like France and Britain, they are doing that. Mm-hmm. But the trouble is that
not the masses.
They're not doing enough.
You know, if you know what I... Yes. I mean, I know our clerks, they come out. I know you always say on your show, we know that. But I'm saying, like, I want to see 1 million Muslims, you know, I mean, coming out saying, you know what, these people, they don't represent us.
Yeah.
Period. But also about ISIS, we have to, first of all, like you said, who supports ISIS? Just Muslim countries. So, I mean, sooner or later, it's going to bite them too, because if they don't stop supporting them.
It's very cynical, I think. I think it's very cynical, Mohammed, that, I mean, even the Saudi royal family probably do not share ISIL's ideology. But they use them as a political tool to advance their foreign policy. And it's extremely dangerous when you do that because, you know, they did it in the past and they seem to be continuing that policy. I think another point you raise about Muslims speaking out more is very interesting. But at the moment, speaking very frankly now, Muslims are extremely divided, divided on national lines, divided on sectarian lines. And I think the vast majority of us who oppose ISIL from different sects and different theological points of view really need to stop inciting against each other and to realize who the enemy is and realize what an internal threat to the House of Islam this radical kind of Khawarij type groups is. Mohammed, I'll just let you come back in.
Yeah, and that's what ISIS is taking advantage of, you see. They're just making people Shia, you know, Sunni, whatever. So ISIS, they are killing Muslims, you know. So we should know that. We should realize it. You know, most of the people they are killing, they are Muslims, right?
But they won't agree with that. They'll say that it's our way or the highway. We're the only true Muslims. Everyone else is kuffar.
I hear you very well, but we know they're not Muslims. You and me, we know, honestly, and the Western people, they know too. Israel, they know that too, right? But I mean, these guys, like you said, the Saudis or Israelis or anybody that using their political tools. But I mean, end of the day, trust me, we know they're not Muslims. These guys, they are not even, you know, I mean, we know they are not. So, I mean, it's about us. It's about time the Muslim people to say, you know what, whether you're Shia, whether you're Sunni, this is our problem and let's solve our own problems.
What about in Somalia, Mohammed? Do you have this Takfiri problem in Somalia?
No, actually, I mean, it's Somaliland, Hargeisa, you know, which is not in Mogadishu, right? It's the north of Somaliland. But actually, we don't have those ones. We don't have it. But you know what? We have, as you know very well, there are some Somalis who went to, you know, from the west went to in Syria, right? And or part of these Takfiris, right? We know that. And most of them, trust me, they were like, you know, they were like rejects of the society. They were like, you know, they couldn't make, you know, in the society. So. They most of them, they were like, they just joined, I mean, they became religious for the last 1-2 years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, we have some of those guys in who left either from the U.S. or from the U.K., but most of their background, if you check them out, trust me, they were thugs. They were in prison. They were like, you know, they were not like, you know, real Muslim, you know? And they're lost. To me,
I think you guys in Somalia, you know more than most that, you know, when you remove that central authority, it just really descends into civil war, and then that kind of breeds extremism, or it gives the space for the extremist groups to thrive. Thank you very much, Mohammed, calling all the way from Somalia. We have another caller in line again. It's a country far away from where I'm standing. We have Saba, who's in Iran. Saba, what would you like to say?
Hi, and good evening. Well, actually, the most important thing that I'd like to mention right now is just not they are claiming to be Muslims. They are claiming to be fighting in the name of Islam, but actually they have no connection to Islam. The most important thing that I want to mention right now is that if we want to, I mean, think about their ideologies, there must be some definition. But when you take a look at the actions and the massacres and all the crimes that they're doing right now, we see that there is no definition. They belong to nothing. Whenever a Muslim country is getting attacked, you saw what happened in Gaza. So what about the ISIL position of that? Did they take an action? They are having great, great cooperation and connection with the Israelis. So is this Islam? Is this supposed to be supporting the Islam and Muslim countries? Well, I do believe that it has nothing to do with Islam. And the most important thing that I want to show right now is that these kind of groups have been made by the intelligence services of the West, and specifically the U.S. We have seen lots of cooperation between these two. The American forces and the intelligence service helped them a lot. And Iran has mentioned this directly from the beginning, that these guys are not going to do anything.
Yeah.
These guys are going...
I think we've lost Saba there, but made a few interesting points there, which maybe I'll pick up on. Israel. Ultimately, if you read the Israeli media and you study what the Israeli think tanks are saying, it's pretty obvious that their strategy is, if you can't control a regime or a government, then destroy the country. Now, they couldn't control Gaddafi in Libya. They couldn't control Saddam Hussein. They couldn't control Bashar al-Assad. So the ultimate, I'm not supporting any of those regimes, but what I'm saying is that if they don't do your bidding, then what they try and do, the CIA, Mossad, whatever, is create an internal uprising. They've obviously tried it with Iran. They've probably tried it with all their enemies, even in South America. And Africa and other places. So it's, if you can't divide and rule, it's divide and destroy. And that is exactly what is happening in Syria. So when you read about all these kind of, Syria's about human rights, or Syria's about justice, and words that are bandied around, like the Arab Spring and humanitarianism, it's not about that. It's about power and control. And the West has decided that it doesn't like Bashar al-Assad, because Bashar al-Assad is a friend of Iran and Hezbollah. They're real enemies, and therefore Syria must be destroyed. The second point I'd like to make very briefly before I go on to another caller is about the intelligence services. I mean, just look at that video. Really well produced. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not a 9/11 truther or anything like that. But, I'm a professional journalist, and that video that they produced, that ISIL video, was amazingly high quality, like a Hollywood production, like it was made in Hollywood. They're definitely getting some help from somewhere. I don't know where. I'm not going to speculate, but nothing is as it seems. We have another caller online, Yusuf from Nigeria. Yusuf, thank you very much for calling in today. What would you like to say?
Yeah, thank you very much. I have a question, and it's a simple one. I want to know, from Press TV, who speaks for Islam? Who defend Islam? Who talk whenever Islam interest is being touched? These are things that disturbs me a lot. Look at what is happening all over the world. Islam has been ridiculed. Even when we have countries that are supposed to look into the interests of Islam, I think the Saudis are not helping matters, considering the way they are looking at Iran. So I call it the Sunni-Shiite dichotomy. It's a serious problem to Islam. The Saudis don't see Shiites as human beings. They don't see anything good in them.
Mm.
In fact, they feel like if you kill a Shiite, it's as if you are killing a kufur. And this is unfortunate.
Yusuf,
it's one of the greatest problems.
Yusuf, I'm gonna let you back in. Bear with me for a minute or so. Who speaks for Islam? I mean, first of all, I'm not speaking for Press TV tonight. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. Who speaks for Islam? Well, that is such a huge question. Ultimately, no one speaks for Islam. We have many different Muslims all over the world, different nationalities, different sects, and they all belong to the House of Islam. We have something known in our history. It's called theological difference. It's called ikhtilaf. It's called, tolerating each other's different opinions and doing it in a way which doesn't call into question somebody else's Islam and to make takfir of your interlocutor. Ultimately, Islam is a broad mosque, there's not just one point of view. We have a framework, we have red lines, but within those red lines, there is room for maneuver. And we have two great orthodoxies in Islam, the Sunni orthodoxy and the Shia orthodoxy. And they have been around for a long, long time. So you're not telling me that somebody in the 20th century, fueled by petrodollars, is going to come along and tell the world of Islam that this is the way it is, and everyone that's gone before, the great scholars that have always tolerated each other and studied with each other, shouldn't have done that? Crazy. Yusuf, I'll let you come in very briefly before we go to another call.
Okay, thank you very much. You see, I'm looking at the tolerance. The Protestants and the Catholic once had problems. They were able to streamline their problems and it becomes something easy for them to speak. They don't go into this kind of situation where they become so violent that to the extent that their violence is also affecting the religion. You don't know what is happening in Africa, especially in Nigeria. You can't talk when you're a Muslim. Whenever you talk, it is Boko Haram. You are a terrorist. You are a beast. In fact, you can't express yourself. It is unfortunate. And it is because the Saudi Arabia has not played any role as a leader. So why I ask that question is because we lack leadership in Islam.
Okay.
Nobody
Yusuf,
is a leader.
I'm gonna cut you off. I would like to talk to you more, but I'm going to cut you off because there's one caller left online and I want to get you in before the end of the show. Bani is in Geneva. Bani, the airtime is yours. Say what you want to say.
Thank you very much. Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for all your great work you do. You are really great. We need more people like you on this planet Earth. God bless you, really, all of you. You are really great. You know, this problem of takfiri, it was already existed many years ago. Now, since a few years ago, the Saudis, they have the privilege to let it go out. And as you see, only in Iraq last year, they have assassinated 34,000 people in the market, in the shops, in the masjid, in the mosque. And all over the world, they know about it. And we don't go and stop these takfiris or somehow stop letting them, giving all this logistics to this assassination brigade. I don't know why you call them Islamist or jihadist. First of all, they don't exist in the dictionary, jihadist. Mm. They make it in order to have all these things in the account of Mr. Israel, who says, we do what we want, you do what we say. This has to be stopped. Or in other words, we have to stop feeding the injustice in any manner. Otherwise, these people are going to invade Europe, like they came easily to Paris with the homegrown help. You know, those homegrowns are everywhere now. Now, these assassination people, they should be stopped worldwide and stop giving them all these logistics, which is going from U.S., going from the West. You know, we have to look at their weapons. Why we don't bring them once when they are captured by these Iraqi who are fighting them, to bring them once on the TV, show them.
Bani, I'm going to have to stop you there simply because we've run out of time. You were our last call of the night. That is all the time we have for today. Thanks for all your calls. I really enjoyed the show and I hope you did too. Some of excellent calls tonight. Thank you very much for them. George Galloway will be back in the hot seat next week, but for now, from me, Roshan Mohammed Salih, it's goodbye.
Hello, just comment the name and the place you left that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
Zero. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can redirect me to your phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?
Okay.